So tonight is kind of auspicious. It's been holding off this rain since the beginning of Sesshin, and there's some lightning happening here. That's kind of exciting. The mountain speaks. At 7:15 tonight was the 67th anniversary of the bombing of Hiroshima. And there, we had already burned many, many Japanese cities by the time we decided to really send in Little Boy and Fat Man. These were the names of the bombs. And the war had already ended. Nazi Germany signed the surrender on May 8th, but it was still continuing to be war in the Pacific. So the United States called for a surrender, a complete surrender of Japan, but Japan ignored this. Sounds like a two-year-old. So we fought back, you know. And certainly there's a lot more with this history and a lot of kind of questions arise, but we do know that for some reason, not just one, but two bombs were deployed. And since that day, 67 years ago, and in 2 days on the 9th of August, we haven't used a bomb since, a nuclear bomb. So within the first dropping of the bomb on Hiroshima, 166,000 people, well, it's not determined. You can't quite tell how many people actually died. Somewhere the span is between 90,000 and 166,000 people right away. That's not to mention, you know, the numbers that continued. So for every bell that was struck, just imagine that over 1,500 people, with every bell, boom. That's the whole town of West Hampton, with every bell. But the atomic bomb didn't just injure the people. It completely flattened the infrastructure, destroyed the cities, and it destroyed the ability, it says, it destroyed all the living, everything that was alive, it destroyed, and the community of the living. And so it destroyed the earth. It was not just genocide. It was the complete obliteration of the society and the devastation completely of the environment. It's noted as the first experience in the history of mankind which actually gave humanity a sense of what it would be like to destroy the earth. To destroy the earth. And we have the ability to do that now because we have in estimates that were, you know, now outdated, there are 40 to 50,000 nuclear weapons stockpiled in the world today. We haven't used them on people, anyone in the world yet, but this number is equivalent to 1 million Hiroshima-type bombs. That's hard to comprehend. One million Hiroshima-type bombs. It takes a long time to make $1 million. That's the only way I can kind of imagine. 1 million bombs that we have made. Something's really wrong. Today in Tokyo, now we I hear a little drip somewhere. So actually, in Japan, it's already tomorrow. So today is the 5th, but actually, it's actually not the 5th. In Japan. And so today, which is tomorrow in Japan, in any case, the grandson of the president, Harry Truman, actually went to Tokyo to memorialize the victims of World War II, and particularly of Hiroshima. And it just really struck me that this young man, you know, this grandson of someone who had actually said, go ahead and fly to these planes that carried these bombs, is feeling inclined. And somehow, it makes a difference. It makes a difference that this person who is somehow connected by blood lineage to the man who actually said to send the bombs, would go to lay a wreath. And he said, I think this cenotaph says it all. To honor the dead, to not forget, and to make sure that we will never let this happen again. Not real eloquent, but he showed up. And somehow that touched me. And a cenotaph is a tomb that's empty, which also felt significant. It's a tomb that's empty. It's a memorial that doesn't have anyone in it. And the rain, too, is auspicious because I remember, was it last year or maybe the year before at the Peace Pagoda? Was that last year? That there was a woman who was a survivor, who had been a child when the bomb hit. And she survived. She wasn't right in the center zone. But she talked about how, you know, and the day was kind of like this all day. You know, it was one of those days you think, this is a miserable day. Here the Peace Pagoda has been trying to build this temple forever since I got here. And the first temple that they built burned down, and so they had built another temple using volunteer labor, which, you know, takes a while sometimes, all in concrete. And so it had taken quite some time, and so here was their final special day, big celebration, hundreds, maybe thousands of people came, and it was pouring rain. And so we all kind of squeezed inside, those of us who could make it, or sat outside in tents, and kind of endured this rain in the mud. And this woman came up, and some of you may have been there, and she said, I love the rain. She said, I just walked and felt the rain on my body. And she said, you don't understand, but for me, rain is very special. Because when I grew up, we couldn't go out in the rain. Because the rain was poison. It had radioactivity in it. As a child, I couldn't play in the rain. So I guess that's good advice for those of you camping out tonight. To remember that it's all relative. How wonderful when it started to sprinkle today at the end of our walk. And at the beginning, to just feel that gentle rain. And now, looking up a little bit about the memorial for Hiroshima, I came across some pictures. They had pictures of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and there was one picture that really stood out for me. It's kind of an odd picture, and I don't know if you can see it very well, but I'll describe it. It's basically a young woman who's standing, and behind her there's a burnt body. And if you can't see it very, very well, but it looks quite grotesque. You can kind of see its teeth, but it's been burnt to a crisp. And she's standing there alive, but her back is turned, and the look on her face is obviously of shock. And it seems that she's almost not aware of what's behind her. She's not looking at it. She's just kind of turned and looking off. And for some reason, the level that I perceive of the disconnect, the way that she had to tolerate what was intolerable, kind of touched me really deeply. And I believe that in a way, this disconnect because of whatever trauma that we've had in our life, the trauma of being born, you could say, is what Dogen is speaking about. is that what we're doing is reconnecting to something that is who we are, our basic nature, our mountain and river nature. And yet there is so much suffering when we touch into the suffering of the world, when we touch into the pain of our own bodies, of our own lives, of the people around us. And then there's Hiroshima, inconceivable suffering. It makes sense that we too would disconnect. As we turned the corner and all of a sudden the whole of the earth opened up, we took a walk today and came through the woods, and then there's a gravel pit and this big hole. Could you feel that? I think of the land here and this mountain. These hills were made out of destruction, actually. The glacier came in and kind of dropped its little bits and pieces on the way, and that's how we get things like gravel. In the intensity of the emotional turbulence itself lies the value, the energy to remedy the problem. This is Carl Jung. So it's not in the disconnect, but it's actually in experiencing the emotional turbulence itself. Therein lies the value, the energy, the solution to remedy the problem. Jung. Can you hear me okay over there? It's okay. I'm kind of shouting, but such is life. It's kind of nice, the breeze, but maybe you can hear. Because mountains are high and broad, the way of riding the clouds is always reached in the mountains. In the intensity of the emotional turbulence itself lies the value, the energy, to remedy the problem. Dogen says, because mountains are high and broad, the way of riding the clouds is always reached in the mountains. It's going in, into the mountains. Now, I can't even begin to pretend that I understand what Dogen is trying to say. But like this picture, I have no idea what this woman was going through. But it touches me. And so hopefully it will touch something in you, knowing that there's no truth to what I'm saying at all. The inconceivable power of soaring in the wind comes freely from the mountains. Priest Dao Kai of Mount Furong said to the assembly, "The green mountains are always walking. A stone woman gives birth to a child at night. Mountains do not lack the qualities of mountains. Therefore, they always abide in ease and always walk." You should examine in detail this quality of the mountains walking. Mountains walking is just like human walking. Accordingly, do not doubt mountains walking, even though it does not look the same as human walking. The Buddha ancestors' words point to walking. This is fundamental understanding. You should penetrate these words. We talk about the non-dual reality But just by talking about it, we engage in dualism. Words, by their nature, are dualistic. Walt Whitman says, "Do I contradict myself? Very well, then I contradict myself. I am large. I contain multitudes." Mountains themselves are the Buddhas and ancestors. Rain. Why is it that we squinch up in the rain and try not to feel it? What are we protecting? What is that sense that's lost from when we were children playing in the rain? And all of a sudden, there's something that's wrong with rain. There's a commentary on the mountains and waters. There's quite a few, but this one is by Abbess Hon G.U. Kennett Roshi of Shasta Abbey. And I've never met her, but she sounds like quite a character. Have you met her? No. She sounds like something else. She her commentary comes from a book that is called Roar of the Tigress. And this is volume 2, where she talks about the Mountains and Waters Sutra of Dogen. And it's volume 2... Zen for Spiritual Adults. I love that. I love that. I kind of feel like, you know, that's what I feel we're doing, you know? It's like let's not play around with all these toys, and let's just kind of get back down to these bare essentials. Zen for Spiritual Adults. I'm not saying that I'm there yet, but it's something to work towards. So she says, in terms of her translation, I'll just read it. Although the moving on of the verdant mountains are more swift than the winds, those who live amidst the mountains do not perceive this or recognize it. Being amidst the mountains refers to things blossoming forth in the everyday world. Those who live apart from the mountains neither perceive nor recognize them. So first she says, those who live amidst the mountains do not perceive this or recognize it. When you're in the rain, I feel like we should just go and sit out there. When we're in the rain, where's the rain? And then she says, being amidst the mountains refers to things blossoming forth in the everyday world. Have you noticed that after sitting for a few days? All of a sudden, you're cutting vegetables. Something blossoms forth. You're bowing. You're eating Oreoke, and all of a sudden, your mind stops. Something else comes forth. What is it for you this week? It feels like a week. These few days, it's coming forth. In the everyday world. Those who live apart from the mountains neither perceive nor recognize them. Well, you know, I don't know about the gravel pits. I used to think I knew that they were bad. But I've told this story, I believe, that actually, did you see the farm when we came around the bend, that there was a barn? There was a barn past the gravel pit. And a nice big meadow. Beautiful. Kind of, you could say, if you just took a picture of that without the pit in the back, it'd be pretty nice. Well, the gravel is actually what we're walking on. Landfill used to help kind of build up certain areas. The dirt that you've been digging is from the ground pit. In the wintertime, the sand and the salt mixed together help us so that we don't slide. The gravel pit also provides an income to allow the farmers that are still doing farming on small independent farms, allows them to have some income when it's slow. That big gravel pit is leased out by the farm, that beautiful farm that we saw. That beautiful farm wouldn't be there if it weren't for that gravel pit. And still, do they see the mountain in digging it up? Do we see what we consume? Where does it come from? Abbess Hoangiyu Kennett, the tigress, says, well, I don't know if she's the tigress, but perhaps it's her roar. Because your training may seem slow, do not doubt that training is actually taking place. For in reality, it is more swift than the wind. This is her commentary on, though, the moving on of the verdant mountains. Yeah. You know, we sometimes think that mountains don't move, that they just hang out there. Do not doubt that training is actually taking place. Moving on means that there's unending training, which is how the training of the Buddhas is and how ours must be. So, you know, it's not just this life. It's not just that we're going to get somewhere and be done with the whole thing. Why would you want to be done with the breeze? Their ignorance of this movement is a very different thing from the fact that those who are the mountains are in the same situation as the plum blossom that does not know that it is red and yet still leads the way onward. For when one flower blooms, spring exists everywhere. A beautiful, was it a hyacinth or that pink flower? However slowly a person may seem to train, there is training going on. And this is important to know, because no matter how rough it's been during this past 3-4 days, when you leave here, something has been changed. Don't take that for granted. Don't get in the car and act normal. Please. You could be a hazard on the road. You may be looking at the trees as the car is moving. It's important to pay attention to our changing universe as it changes moment by moment. We have this container, and the container is still present, so don't explode it in our excitement and jubilance to kind of, we get that jiriki, that energy that starts finally pumping through us, and we're not so exhausted. Maybe you still are, but some of you might be feeling this. Pay close attention there that you're still holding the container, not just for yourself, but for everyone. If you pop out, we got to come get you. Just kind of hold it tight. In this, there's a book actually that tells you how to be an adult. And it's called How to Be an Adult. And it's actually a book on psychological and spiritual integration written by David Rico. It was recommended to me. So I got the book, but I have to say I never read it until I saw Zen for Spiritual Adults, and I thought maybe I should check this out. And David Rico has some really good things to say, actually. He says, our true self, with all its free energy, impulses, feelings, and creativity, may have threatened our parents. Just think about it, right? We then, just for survival, design a false self that met with our parents' approval and maintained our role in the family. So we felt safety was only possible within those boundaries. Such boundaries became the long-standing habits and patterns that have been our limitations ever since. Dogen says, because mountains are high and broad, the way of riding the clouds, why is it we can't ride and soar with the wind? Ride the clouds. Well, you should read the book. It's short. Alice Miller writes that the love I have gained with such an uphill effort and self-defacement was not meant for me at all, for me, meaning the true me, the true self, at all, but for the me that I created, the one that I created to please them, so that I could survive within the family. So how do we break through these limits? Be the mountain. What is this mountain? You are the mountain. You're always the mountain. Sometimes you think you're just a little anthill, or I think, you know, the mountain's over there, or that's a real mountain over there. They've really realized themselves. They're a real mountain. They act like a real mountain. Trungpa Rinpoche gives us some advice with his brilliant insight into the mind, particularly the Western mind. Instead of attempting to rid myself of my old beliefs, instead of attempting to rid myself of my old beliefs, I simply no longer act on them. So don't act out. I allow the beliefs to be present, and I act more and more in accord with the new, better informed convictions. I contain new behaviors simultaneously with my old beliefs and habits. Do you ever try to get rid of something? Yeah. You know, I just want to get rid of this habit or this, you know, I don't want to think that. The thought is there. The response, the impulse is there. Don't try to get rid of it. It's just there. So what he says is, has 7 points to pay attention to. I accept challenges while still feeling afraid. I trust someone while still doubting. I choose pleasures that may have an element of risk. Now that sounds like Trungpa Rinpoche. I choose pleasures that may have an element of risk. Yeah, risk going out in the rain. Risk thoroughly enjoying whatever it is. Risk it. I let go of punitiveness while still feeling vengeful. So I don't try to punish somebody, even though I may still feel like I want to get them. That's my interpretation. I ask for what I want generally, while still allowing this strong desire to remain a wish. My self-esteem coexists with occasional self-reproach. It's just the way it is. It's not going to go away. I feel anxious without taking it out on anyone. That's a good one. I feel anxious without taking it out on anyone. Traditionally, the last night of Sesshin is the night when the Zendo stays open. And so the Zendo will be open for you to go deep into the mountain. Go deep into what presents itself. Go deep into whatever those boundaries are, those false self boundaries that don't allow riding the clouds, feeling the wind, being completely whatever it is. Allow tonight the stone woman of your zazen to give birth to a child at night. Examine in detail this quality of the mountain's walking. Remember, mountain's walking is just like human walking. Do not doubt. Do not doubt mountain's walking, even though it does not look the same. The Buddha ancestors' words point to walking. This is fundamental understanding. It's the foundation. You should penetrate these words. Don't just hear, don't just believe, but penetrate the words. A stone woman is a barren woman, a woman empty, unable to give birth. It was an image used during the time of Dogen that wasn't very positive. And Dogen takes it and, like everything, turns it around. Take those stones of your mind. Take the stones in your body. Let them get ground up in your dark night of the soul. Birth is not for faint-hearted people. I've witnessed a few, and I have never done it, but it's can be scary business. And yet, it's also what I hear, the miracle. One of the most incredible things. It is through the pain. It is penetrating through the pain that gives birth. And finally, I wonder, perhaps Dogen didn't leave Kyoto because of political reasons. Perhaps Dogen didn't run away to the mountains. Perhaps instead it was the mountains who called Dogen home. Perhaps Dogen just sat and did nothing, and the mountains received him and gave birth. sentient beings are numberless.